Nyttårssalget er i gang hos Dressmann. Nå får du opp til 70% rabatt på et stort utvalg skjorter, gensere, bukser og mye, mye mer. Opp til 70% rabatt ved kjøp av to eller flere varer. Salget finner du i butikk og på dressmann.com.
En podcast fra Podplay.
You know, I always have been influenced by Tommy Lee. I thought he's a great rock drummer that a lot of the things that I've played over the years probably had a lot of swing and swagger from Tommy Lee. But there's Nico McBrain in there too. There's Phil Rudd from AC/DC. Somewhere in there, there's Diesel Dahl from TNT.
Gammalmeden.
Recording in progress.
Now it's working.
Yeah, I'm just waiting to make sure. It's pretty early in the morning, so I'm just clicking on to make sure he joins. It's rock and roll early, man. It's 8:20. Oh, here he comes.
Oh, nice.
Hey,
how are you?
Hi, buddy. Hey, happy new year. Good to see you.
You too, man. You too. Good to see you. I just wanted to make sure everything was going cool, so I'm just going to drop off now, and I'll leave you guys to it.
Thank you, sir. Torkil
from Radio Rock, Norway.
Torkil, hi, buddy. How are you?
Oh, there was a strange sound in the background here. But how early is it for you now?
It's 8. Yeah.
Just get out from the shower or something. Your hair is wet there.
This is what you do. You get up early, you make a lot of coffee. I'll be on the third cup now. And you put a Kiss shirt on. Hey, it's good.
Kiss shirt. Where are you? You live in LA?
I live in Las Vegas.
In Vegas?
And yeah, I moved in, I've lived almost 20 years in Las Vegas. I used to live in LA.
Okay.
Some of the bands that I started playing within the States, you know, I moved in maybe, I think 1996 to LA. And, you know, I'm Canadian. So I'm originally from Winnipeg, Canada, but I moved to LA. Lived here for almost 10 years. And then I moved to the crazy, wonderful city of Vegas. And I've been there ever since. But I still do a lot of work here. And what's great is, I'm not sure if you've been to either of these cities, but you could fly under an hour. You can, you know, go between these two places, or you could drive. It's a 4-hour drive. So I'm here a lot.
Let me just say, welcome, Brent Fitz, to this podcast, Gammalmeden. It's about nostalgia. It's about the moment you just understood that music and rock music would be a huge part of your life. But first of all, congratulations with your new album with Slash and Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators.
Yeah, I think we all are happily surprised that we know the world is in a very strange place right now, and the adapting to what's going on pandemic wise and to still make music is a test to, you know, our band and how we were able to, you know, navigate that. So we did record it in a different fashion this time, in the sense of we've often, you know, worked on music here in Los Angeles, and we did work on the new record here in LA, but we decided to, you know, step out of our normal comfort zone, and we went to Nashville, Tennessee. So this whole record is a different approach. The world's in a different place. The band is the same. It's the same, you know, five guys who we get along great musically. We've been together, you know, 12 years now, me playing with Slash for 12 years. And so, you know, we're putting out this new record, and it's a little bit of the, we'll see how it goes. Because, you know, the touring aspect of putting out new music and getting to actually perform, say in like, you know, Norway or Europe or South America or Japan, is challenging right now. So we're going to do in a couple weeks a whole run around the States, and hoping that all goes good. But yeah, so new record and some touring, and my wife is tired of me being at home, so she's pretty excited to have us head out on the road.
I hope you can hear this because I want to play a few seconds from my favorite song so far from the new record, Call Off the Dogs. Let's just try. It just sounds like you guys are having a lot of fun here.
Oh, it's absolutely that. You know, it's great to be able to jump in with, you know, Slash has so many great riffs. Of course, over his body of work, over the, you know, many, many years, we've all heard so many great riffs that he's contributed to. But every time he comes up with a new one, it's a pleasure. I get to be the rhythm section with him, you know, Todd Kearns and I. We usually just like that song, for example, if I would remember when we, you know, started working on it, Slash will always come up with that da 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 da, you know, it's just a vibe. And then we just kind of jump in. And sometimes it's up tempo, sometimes it's a little more, you know, mid tempo mainstreams. But we're always good for a few really barn burnery kind of, you know, up-tempo rock songs. So that one, I think, just came out Friday. And, you know, that one we'll definitely throw into the set when we get out on the road right away. We've actually been rehearsing that one, you know, right now. So, yeah, it's nice to hear it. I'm glad, you know, people are hearing it around the, you know, over in Europe. And hope you like it.
We do. And you can play a lot of instruments. You play with all, yeah. You played with Lemmy, Alice Cooper. You played with, still play with Gene Simmons, right?
We're on a good friendship basis, and obviously he's still doing Kiss. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I had a great time playing in the first time Gene did a solo band, which was a few years back. And so, I am wearing the Kiss shirt today. Kiss is a huge part of my DNA, my musical makeup. So, I keep Gene, high on my list of cool gigs that I got to do with. Am I playing with him today? No, I'm busy with Slash. But will I play with Gene again? Quite possibly.
Yeah, and let's not forget the Guess Who, Bruce Kulick, Vince Neil, Gilbert Clark, and mm-hmm. the list is long. And you're used to touring a lot. So how has the lockdown period been for you?
Well, there's two good things. You know, getting to spend a little more time with family at home, my wife, most important, has been used to since we met, you know, the touring cycle that comes with being a musician. I always say we're kind of gypsy pirates, you know, we're gone. And we, you know, kiss our wives goodbye, and then you go out and do the tour for you know, if it's either a week or a month or several months. And then this time, my wife's like seeing me home all the time, and that's everyone that you will speak to who's, you know, been an entertainer their whole life. It's not exactly the most pleasing. It's like you have to rewire yourself to think, okay, I'm going to not be traveling. And the hardest thing, and I'm a people person. I really value my friendships with people in music that I've been, you know, fortunate to meet around the world, and to not have that direct connection and the travel mm-hmm. and to go and tour. And then, you know, I have friends in Oslo. I have friends all over Europe, you know, like that I'm very close with, you know, I could tell you I've drank a lot of coffee around the planet. And it's not the reason I play music, but I really like drinking coffee. And one of my favorite coffee shops is Tim Wendelbo in Oslo there. And, you know, I keep thinking, well, when's the next time I'm going to be able to do that? You know, it's like kind of a strange concept that I've been away from all these comforts.
But Tim Wendelbo, he's known for his coffee shop here in Oslo.
Amazing. Amazing. You guys should be proud over there. You should be proud of also, and I got to send a shout out. When I was, buying records in my early teens, going to the local record shop up in Winnipeg, I'd always stumble on. I remember when I bought the first Metallica record, the first, you know, my first Iron Maiden record, you know, when they were brand new albums. You know, I was into everything in the, you know, late 70s and early 80s. And one of the bands I discovered early on was TNT.
Of course.
I mean, Ronnie LaTecro is one of my favorite guitar players, and Tony Harnell, amazing singer. So I'm very near and dear to the band TNT. And actually, last time I was in Oslo, I bought some limited edition versions of some albums that I couldn't get in America. So I'm super fan. That's what I miss about touring, buying records, drinking coffee, playing music around the world. So it's been tough.
Yeah. What other Norwegians do you know? Do you know any of the guys in TNT?
I don't know them personally, other than Tony Harnell. I've met Tony many times, and, you know, he lives back in America. He's actually in Nashville. So, I've never met Ronnie LaTecro. Would I like to meet him? Absolutely. Absolutely.
And touring is also writing music. I heard in another interview we did with Slash that he always writes a lot of music on tour. How do you guys do that? Is it like right before the concert starts and he just...
Yes, it really is that. It's not that hard to, if you every day sound check before the show, which we do, and we like and look forward to that every day, this band sound checks. And, you know, part of sound checking is because we want it to be, you know, comfortable for everyone on stage. And, you know, a sound check becomes the first chance everybody's, you know, first part of the day getting to, you know, we're all, everyone's drinking coffee and jumping on stage and you're just kind of hyped like for the show. So the riffs come out, and Slash, like I said, is always good for, he's just got a lot of great riffs still coming all the time. So that's where a sound check is ideal for this band. So the whole record, the new album Four, I would say at least half of it started from a sound check on the Living the Dream tour from, you know, previous couple of years. And I think it's not rocket science. It's, you know, we could spend time also in a rehearsal room, you know, off tour, which we do as well. But I mean, you're on tour, we're spending time together every day and we're already warmed up and the riffs are just there and you're kind of fired up even from the show before or something. And we record them, you know, record the ideas at soundcheck, and then, you know, Slash revisits them and probably, you know, refines them a little bit. And then next thing you know, we've got half a song together, and Miles Kennedy is always good with coming up with a little bit of a, you know, a scat melody, maybe not a committed lyric, but just get a melody over top of a riff. And then it just organically turns into a rock song, you know, and we've been doing that for years.
Okay, Brent, let's time travel a little bit. For me, Iron Maiden was the first band that I just thought, wow, I want to do this. I want to play rock and roll. I want to know more about it. What kind of band did the same to you the moment you just understood that this is it?
Well, I will say I'm wearing the Kiss shirt, like I said, and Kiss definitely hit all those marks for me. That was an early on, if I could put the time and the influence. So growing up in the 70s and around 19, you know, when I'm buying albums and, you know, a lot of times your influences as a kid come from your friends, sometimes your parents, you know, if they have an album collection of things. I definitely was, you know, my parents had Beatles records and my parents, you know, but a lot of that was more like music that I discovered that my parents liked, but my friends and everybody that I grew up with was into hard rock and heavy metal. So I will tell you, Kiss was certainly the first band to really have a huge impact on me, but I know you love Iron Maiden. So let's celebrate Iron Maiden. So all those early Maiden records I bought when they were, you know, first out, you know, Killers and Peace of Mind were, you know, I saw the Peace of Mind tour in Winnipeg, at Coney Hatch, Canadian band, opened for them. Which was a life-changing concert, but I actually thought the Power Slave tour, which I saw after that, I didn't see Number of the Beast. It didn't come through through Winnipeg.
Okay.
But the Power Slave tour, I think, was one of them. Like, to this day, I can almost remember every moment of it as a concert. And that era, you know, in the mid 80s, when all those records came out, and I saw Kiss for the first time in 1984, which is actually on the Animalize tour. And ironically, in the band at that time, guitarist Bruce Kulick, who I've now had a long history, you know, in the last 20, 30 years playing together. You know, it's funny how you go see a band that you're very, you know, you're influenced by. And then years later, I've had, you know, just a luxury and pleasure of getting to play with some of those people who I got to see, you know, when I was much younger. But Iron Maiden, I've probably seen Iron Maiden probably a dozen times. What does that say as a fan? So, and every time they've come, even recently through Vegas, I always try and go see them. And so I have a massive love for Iron Maiden. So you want to share me your love for Iron Maiden? I already know you love them.
Thanks.
Can I give a shout out to a Winnipeg band called Maiden Manitoba? I wish I was wearing the shirt. I didn't pack the shirt, but my friends back home in Winnipeg have, it's the coolest name, Maiden Manitoba. And they're the Iron Maiden tribute band back home. And they're awesome. There's actually a great, the Iron Maidens, the girls that play in the States, and they play in Vegas all the time. And every time they play, it is sold out. So clearly they're doing something right.
Okay. Oh my God. The power, this World Slavery Tour, you actually saw the sarcophagus on stage and everything from Live After Death video. You were there?
Yeah, I was there. I have the ticket to prove it. I have the shirt, you know, the Power Slave Tour shirt. And what's funny is I can't wear it anymore. All those shirts, you know, we were a lot smaller and we were kids at the time, but I have every, and there were the 3/4 length sleeves, you know, it was white with the Power Slave Tour album cover. And the black sleeves. And I still have a great, you know, proud collection of all those shirts. And it seems like all those concerts happened from about 1982 to about 1988. I saw every hard rock concert that came through Winnipeg. Now, I'm from this smaller city in Canada. That's not Toronto or Vancouver. You know, not always every tour would come through. But the good thing was, surprisingly, in the 80s, most of the bands that I liked came through. Scorpions, Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, you know, and Kiss. And so everything that came through was, those were all my favorite bands. Yeah. And so I have every t-shirt. I have all the original albums, the vinyl I bought back then. And I could tell you, I probably listened to an Iron Maiden record like 3 weeks ago back in Vegas. I mean, you know, I feel like I'm always revisiting being a teenager. I think that's what keeps you, you know, I'm always a fan. We're always going to be fans, whether you play in a band with Slash, we're all still fans of the things we loved growing up, right?
Yeah. Okay, a regular question here in this podcast. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the first time, the moment you heard a Maiden song or heard Maiden?
Yeah, it would have been the local rock radio station called City FM, 92 City FM, which still exists. And it's basically, that was the soundtrack of my childhood, was radio. But they also, it was great because if you remember some of the early videos for those bands too. So, you know, an album cover made an impact on you back then, because Iron Maiden had some of the most amazing album covers that you just stared at. And, you know, and then hearing those songs, you know, on the radio. But just getting together with my friends, you know, we all discovered it from radio. And then you go down to the record store. And sometimes if you just saw an album, I used to buy a record because it was like, holy fuck, that's the coolest record, you know, cover I've ever seen. If it was, you know, Slayer, or, you know, remember the first time I bought an Anthrax record. It was just, you know, sometimes you just go on the whim of the cover. But Iron Maiden, definitely seeing an album in a record store and hearing them on the radio.
Yeah. And what, do you remember the first album you bought? Like you saw Eddie there and you just had to have that album?
Yeah, well, I had Killers, but my friends had the first record, you know, Paul Di'Anno, all that era. And I think Number of the Beast was the one we all just, like, every kid my age, I'm 51. So you got to remember in 82 or whatever it was, I was 12 years old. That's a very impactful time, you know, to have, you know, all your friends. We just all love the same music. And interesting enough, in that time, there was a division in growing up in the neighborhood. Were you an Iron Maiden fan or were you a Judas Priest fan? I don't know if you had that over in Europe, but in Canada, it was very much defined. Which were you? And I was like, well, I like both bands. Mm-hmm. I grew up in this certain neighborhood, and on the a couple streets away was another music fan friend of mine who you might know, who's a very famous musician and wrestler, Chris Jericho. Yeah. So he was always the Iron Maiden, you know, aficionado. Like, to this day, of course, we know Chris is very publicly the biggest Iron Maiden fan. But I think I was, you know, look, we all went to those same concerts together. And you know, again, we just all had the same influences. You know, Maiden was just like, every kid had a Maiden shirt. After that Power Slave tour, when I went to school the next day, every kid and the girls all had Iron Maiden shirts. It was just, it was such a culture back then. Everybody liked a lot of the same music. It's interesting how it was. And it might, it just might not. Is it not that way now? I don't know. All I know is how I grew up.
You actually play a tribute, like a cover version of, with Chris Jericho.
Evil That Men Do.
Evil That Men Do. I'm actually got some seconds from the first verse. Yeah. I really like his vocals there. So let's listen to it. There's a razor and I walk the line on that silver blade. Slipped in the dust with his daughter, eyes red with the slaughter of innocence. And I will pray for her, and I will call her name out loud. Oh, it's so nice.
How about, I think Iron Maiden invented that gallop. And I mean the rhythm. And, you know, the power of certain bands, that the second you hear them, they just have a special, like, nobody sounds like Iron Maiden. Mm-hmm. And a lot of, we're all influences, you know, influenced by things we grew up on. And I've, you know, listened to Maiden 1,000 times, but they're, you know, like, nobody sounds like that band, you know. And I probably, you know, incorporated, there's some sort of DNA in my drumming and the things that I like in you know, Nico McBrain is part of my musical drummer makeup in some ways, but yeah. I think that gallop is really specific to Iron Maiden.
And it's so, in the original, like Maiden, the Maiden version of this song, his bass drumming there, like, you would think it's like two pedals, like a double bass drum, but it's not.
It's not. And that's important too, is to know that Nico McBrain isn't using double, you know, double pedal. And I didn't use it on that recording either. And that was challenging to nail that. And I was very specific about my own challenge. Like, I got to nail that part because, you know, as a fan, you want to do it justice.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Chris and I very proudly, hey, that's two guys from Winnipeg that grew up on Iron Maiden, seeing all the same concerts. And that's our little tribute to one of our favorite bands.
Yeah. What other people is are on this? It's a guy from
Paul
Alice
Gilbert.
In Chains, like Mike
Paul
Enos.
Gilbert. Oh, I think he did play bass on it. I didn't get to do the session with him, but Paul Gilbert definitely played guitar on it. Bob Kulick played guitar and produced the session as well. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like the whole record. If you get that, it's Numbers from the Beast, is what it's called.
Yeah,
there's a whole bunch of great people that attributed that on that record. Yeah.
How did you guys do it? Did you ever meet in the studio, or is it recorded separately?
Yeah, Bob invited me down. It was done in LA, probably in, 10 years ago? No.
Mm-hmm.
maybe 20 years ago, I think. it was probably 2002 or something. Anyway, I don't know. Bob had a session where, you know, he's probably doing all of those tracks with everyone, and he just sort of slots you in. And I came down, and I think Chris sang the next day. So we did like the bed tracks and it's more like a studio session. It's not the same as, you know, everyone getting in the room and jamming it, but yeah, it's great. I'm glad you had that. I didn't not forget about that. I just, It's great that we can talk about it today, because I not often get to celebrate and talk about that track that I did. So thanks for that.
And I really like, I also have some seconds from the ending, because you did a creative version there. You didn't just take the Maiden version and do the same thing. You actually did something else. So let's listen to that. That was the original. Wait a minute.
Okay. Well, we can listen to that.
Shit. That was the original.
Well, that sounded good. That was the original. I'm not bad at that.
Oh, let me see. I've got it somewhere here. On my computer, intro, ending, there it is. Let me see. Okay.
Okay, and you know, like, I think Nico McBrain has a great drum sound. You know, again, like the musicality of Iron Maiden, the toms, the drums had very high pitched, you know, like they cut through the mix. And, and you know, some of those tom fills are things that we all, as drummers, you know, you want to, it's like you go to an Iron Maiden concert, you're air banding to the drum parts, you know, as if you were going to like a Rush show or something like that. So I, when we recorded that, again, I want to be respectful, and I tried to get a little bit more dialed into the drum sound and how it would, you know, fit in with the music. I'm always thinking, you know, like big pictures, you know, just not just the parts, but the sonics of it, and be, you know, respectful. When I'm playing somebody else's music, it's very important to be respectful when something's already, the template has been created, and especially when music has been celebrated for a long time and it's already, you know, songs that we all know and love. When you completely change it and it's unrecognizable, I'm not as much a fan of that. So, and even playing with, you know, Slash all these years and being respectful of all the drummers that Slash has worked with, you know, Steven Adler, Matt Sorum. And when I, you know, am playing with him as his drummer in the Slash Miles Kennedy band and the Conspirators, I think I need to be a bit of all those guys. And I need to have that whole body of work put into my everything I do. So, you know, I do cover tunes in my, I also have a band called Took, and Took is we basically are the Canadian supergroup that honors all the great Canadian specific artists that we grew up loving. And some of those bands that you would maybe be familiar with over in Europe would be, for example, of course, it's easy to say Rush, but maybe Loverboy, April Wine, maybe some of those bands are familiar, maybe some of those aren't. But anyway, those bands that I grew up on, you know, as much as I loved Iron Maiden, I still loved a lot of Canadian bands, and some of those you might not have heard of. Just like, you know, I loved TNT. I discovered a band from Norway, but not everybody in America might have also, you know, grown up loving, you know, TNT, but where a lot of the American bands like Motley Crue and Rat or something might have been more, you know, a bigger artist here. But anyway, the fact that, you know, I have always tried to honor what was in place. So when I play with Took, and I'm the bass player in Took, and I've also played drums, that's my multi-instrumentalist persona coming through. But I like to be, you know, true to the original. And, you know, I think that Iron Maiden track, I specifically was, I pained over it to make it good.
When you want to be, have some of Steven Adler, have some Matt Sorum, what do you do? Do you rehearse with those guys on your headset, or what do you do?
Starting when I was young and playing other people's music in the environment, which was, I had a drum kit at home at my parents in the basement. You know, growing up in Canada, most of the homes, you know, the basement is where all the rock bands start, in your parents' basement.
Yeah.
And, you know, having a record player beside the drum kit and vinyl and of course my whole entire rock collection, which would have been, you know, everything that was, you know, at my fingertips, every Iron Maiden record or whatever else I was growing up on, Rush albums, Kiss albums, you know, I'm just playing along to those records. So I'm slowly but surely, you know, gaining all that influence and style into my playing from playing along to records as a kid. Mm-hmm. So that's where all that DNA comes from early on. And just learning that when I jammed along to the songs, I got good at playing other people's parts and hearing them on records. It's different than today when you can listen to an MP3 and, you know, like, or slow down something and listen. You know, we had to go to the record and, oh, what was he playing? And you go back, put the record on. And, you know, it was a little harder to get through all that. But, you know, to be influenced by what I do with Slash, I just think my gig playing with him, it's just a better fit. It's a better comfort. And that's why I think Slash and I work well together as guitar player and drummer. Is because I do fit in with his, a lot of everything that's come before him. And I'm just adding the new, you know, a bit of everything with what we're doing now. And you'll probably, without directly knowing influences, I'm, you know, kind of respectfully playing in a style of Slash, you know, all the things he's worked on, plus all the things I've grown up on. So, you know, there's a bit of, the you know, I always have been influenced by Tommy Lee. I thought he's a great rock drummer that a lot of the things that I've played over the years probably had a lot of swing and swagger from Tommy Lee. But there's Nico McBrain in there too. You know, there's Phil Rudd from AC/DC. There's definitely somewhere in there, there's Diesel Dahl from TNT. There just is, you know, everything you grew up, Metallica, it's all there.
So yeah, you know Diesel.
I don't know him personally, but I'm telling you, I could go on and on about TNT if you want.
I actually had Ronnie as a guest in this podcast, and it was really nice. So
yeah, if you talk to any of those guys, please tell them I said hello, and I am a big fan, and I much respect the music, and I was there from day one. So, and I'm still on board with the band.
Nyttårsvalget er i gang hos Dressmann. Nå får du opp til 70% rabatt på et stort utvalg skjorter, gensere, bukser og mye, mye mer. Opp til 70% rabatt ved kjøp av to eller flere varer. Salget finner du i butikk og på dressmann.com.
Hei, bellboy fra hotels.com.
Stemmer det at man kan bli hotels.com-medlem gratis, bo 10 netter og få en bonusovernatting? Er det en slags hemmelig klubb, eller?
Hvis du mener det bredt tilgjengelig og gratis medlemskap I hotels.com, så ingen hemmelig håndtrykk. Bare fordeler.
Men vi får sånne skumle mystiske kapper.
Jeg kan fikse en hotellmorgenkåpe. Egentlig mye diggere. Hotels.com. Bo 10 netter og få en bonusovernatting på 100,000-vis av hoteller. Vilkår for bonusordningen gjelder. Se nettstedet for detaljer.
You're listening to a podcast. I'm Bruce Dickinson. You're not. And you're listening to Gamal Maiden.
Here's a little twist and a connection. So, The first time I saw Slash live, first time I saw Guns N' Roses was before they were the biggest band in the world, which would have been, I saw them in 1987 and they were opening. They came through Winnipeg, Canada, my hometown, probably one of their first tours at, like, you know, doing international gigs, which was opening for The Cult.
Yeah.
So,
with Matt Sorum? Did Matt Sorum play in The Cult then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And The Cult were, you know, that was like the Sonic Temple tour. So, you know, The Cult were very, very big at the time. It was great. So
that's a nice album too, Sonic Temple.
Yeah, but I would have gone to that concert a fan of The Cult and then going, oh, that band Guns N' Roses, I've heard of them. You know, the record had just come out. Okay. So it wasn't... All those songs were not, you know, everybody was not familiar, especially because of MTV not releasing the Sweet Child of Mine and the Paradise City videos to mass, you know, success.
Yeah.
So going to see, you know, Guns N' Roses for the first time, I just remember going, man, that band had a vibe. I mean, they were like a real gritty, tough rock band, and they definitely had a cool vibe. And I remember, of course, you know, going, wow, the guitar player, great, whole band, great, Axl, great. But, it you know, I was there going, but The Cult, man, that had such great songs. And I just, you know, I was just a big Cult fan at the time. So fast forward to not that far after that, maybe 6 months, when the Guns N' Roses trajectory started to get, you know, just an explosion. But they came back on Somewhere in Time tour, Iron Maiden. Oh. Which, if you know, if you ask the members of Guns N' Roses, I can't remember if that was a successful tour or if that was the right pairing. But I was, you know, again, I'm going to see Iron Maiden for the third time, you know, because I saw the two tours previously.
Yeah.
And so the Somewhere in Time tour, which was interesting because that would have been, was that 87 or early 88? Probably early 88. But a lot of keyboards,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
in their music back then. And Guns N' Roses was basically making this template of getting everything back to, like, you know, five-piece straight-up rock and roll with two guitars.
Yeah.
And yet Iron Maiden, which was, you know, a very influential two-guitar-wielding rock band, had some keyboards, you know, interesting in that time. But I still loved Iron Maiden, and I got to see that tour, you know, as an 18-year-old kid. And I saw Slash twice.
Oh my God.
I was even, you know, I was still in high school. Cool,
you're,
right?
You're a lucky guy. I was too young to see any concerts in...
How old are you?
I'm 43.
Yeah, you would have been a little too young to see those tours that I saw.
Yeah, and if I lived in Oslo, I could probably, yeah... ask my parents to take me to these concerts, but I come from the countryside, and it's in the 80s, an airplane ticket would be like half a salary or something.
So, but growing up, not just being able to see the bands, but you definitely would have read about them, Metal Hammer, Kerrang, all the, I'm sure there was magazines,
yeah,
from Norway specific. And those are very impactful too. I wish those magazines were as prevalent now, but for me, it was Circus, Hit Parader, Cream, Faces. You know, I lived Metal Edge. I lived by those magazines. So the bands that I couldn't see in person, I lived through them in photos and, yeah, then in videos, because, you know, at least Iron Maiden, you know, made some, come on, the 2 minutes to Midnight video, Aces High.
Yeah.
Like, you know, those were fucking unbelievable at the time, you know, yeah, like for me as an influence. So bands that had cool videos, and you know, I remember, well, Twisted Sister opened the tour that I saw Maiden on, you know, on Power Slave album.
Okay.
And but they were a big video band too at the time, so actually we loved Twisted Sister because they had these crazy videos that we watched as a kid. So
with that yeah, that grumpy, badass
school teacher
and the father. What are you going to do with your life?
See? We all talk about it today.
So
videos
nice.
Videos were so impactful back then. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny because we've made videos with Slash, several.
Yeah.
And, you know, the band, I think, had a good time making the videos. But, you know, in a lot of ways today, the impact of a video is, you know, the YouTube presence and whatnot, but you just don't get that same mileage out of a video.
Oh.
And it's almost like, and the ability to make a video a lot cheaper, you know, sometimes it's like, you don't have to make the grandiose statement for a video, but I miss that. I miss those videos that,
yeah,
you know, we all saw and talked about. Do you see the Motley Crue, Looks at Kill video? Like, first time I saw, that video, I mean, anyone who was playing music and drums and saw Tommy Lee, the way he, you know, looked in that video and twirled his sticks and just slammed, you couldn't not be influenced. You know, everybody wanted to be that.
Mm-hmm.
And those videos were very important for kids growing up and seeing our heroes.
Yeah. So now you have to be on TikTok.
I'm not. I do watch TikTok once in a while, but I hate to be a bit of a complaining grown-up, but a lot of that stuff is overwhelming. And, you know, it's,
yeah,
like you almost need a young person to go, how do I do this? How do I get on TikTok? But yeah, it's pretty fun.
Brent, I got a signal here from Darren. We got one more minute. So this has been really nice talking to you. And yeah, to sit back in a time machine with you. I hope you enjoyed it yourself.
I absolutely. We can talk longer. I'm always happy to talk about things that we all share the same love for. Music is such a contagious, you know, outlet. So it's great to talk about new music when it's yourself as well. But I mean, I love just to have the ability to talk about other artists. You know, sometimes it's not easy to talk about yourself, but it's great to talk about other things. Yeah. But if I'm using myself as an example, as making new music, you know, with Slash and a new album, we have this new album called Four coming out. It's very exciting, but it's funny to think, you know, the influence and all the things you grew up on, and then you put out your own music, and you know, all those influences come into play. Yeah. And then you have your own music to celebrate. So, but it's really a whole conglomeration of all the stuff we've all grown up on. And, you know, Slash definitely has a lot of, you know, his influences are obviously my loves are similar to him. Aerosmith, you know, we all agree on a lot of cool bands like, you know, Stones and stuff like that. So
do you think Slash ever listened to Iron Maiden?
Sorry to interrupt, guys. It's going to cut off. It's going to cut off because there's only a 40-minute timer on the Zoom.
Oh, Slash listens to everything. So okay. I'm sure he's listened to Iron Maiden over time. And he's toured with those guys. So, you know, we toured with them in 2011 in Australia. We did a whole tour, a big festival tour.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Der ble møtet plutselig kuttet. Må si takk da til Brent Fitzy fra bandet til Slash for at han tok seg tid, stod opp tidlig og greier på morgenen og tok en lang prat med en nordtrønder I Norge om Maiden og Slash og masse greier. Så det her var koselig det. Men litt rart å bare bli kuttet på det viset her da. Sånn det. Takk for at du hørte på.
Gammal Maiden med Torkel Torsvik, en podcast fra Radio Rock.
Du har hørt en podcast fra Podplay. En enklere måte å høre podcast på. Last ned appen Podplay, eller se podplay.no.
Nyttårssalget I gang hos Dressmann. Nå får du opp til 70% rabatt på et stort utvalg skjorter, gensere, bukser og mye, mye mer. Opp til 70% rabatt ved kjøp av to eller flere varer. Salget finner du I butikk og på dressmann.com.